We continue to read from the conversation between Jesus and Nicodemus, except that Nicodemus has faded out of the picture here. It's as if Jesus left him in the dust or in the darkness, and he's shining a brilliant light, not only for Nicodemus, but for everyone who hears or reads this account. Certainly it was a powerful divine seed planted in the heart of Nicodemus, but it should also be a powerful divine seed planted in our hearts. And it starts with, here's one of the most famous lines in the New Testament, God so loved the world. That those few words might bring to mind our awareness of what St. John said in his first letter, God is love. God is love. It defines not only his very essence, but it describes everything that he does. He's all love. Now, maybe other religions would not disagree, I don't know, but that was never said until Jesus Christ came and revealed the love of God. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son so that everyone who believes in him might not perish, but might have eternal life. So the love of God is gift. When he gives his Son, he gives his whole self. What does the Son do? He gives his whole self. What does the Holy Spirit do? He gives his whole self. That's what love is. God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world might be saved through him. So you see, God's whole intention is salvation. The whole summary of his project is love, and we're included in that project. Everyone is. Now, why didn't that very basic truth about God come to the foreground until Jesus came? Because our experience doesn't necessarily tell us that God is love. We look around and we say, this place is a mess, and there's a lot of bad people around, and we suffer from a lot of bad things, and we ourselves do not live by love all the time. And we say, well, if God were love, he would have done it differently. Well, what we discover when we ponder this in light of Revelation is that all that mess is not to be, the blame for all that mess is not to be put on God, but rather on us, or on all who sin, including the angels who sin. And this is why we have this mixed up world where there are a lot of beautiful things. First of all, what God does is beautiful, but even the works of man are often very beautiful. We have to admit, extraordinary developments that are really beautiful. At the same time, there's all kinds of ugliness and division and corruption and man-made suffering. What's this? Well, it's because God is love, and sometimes or often we are not love. And Jesus mentions this here. He says, the light came into the world, love came into the world, God came into the world, but people preferred darkness to light because their works were evil. If we prefer darkness to light, then love cannot penetrate, or at least cannot irradiate or dominate the way he wants to. And then we're left with a darkened condition. Now, in Easter, we're celebrating the extraordinary victory of love, the extraordinary revolution of that overcomes sin and even death itself. But part of the story of Easter is that Jesus rose after being brutally crucified, brutally executed. So it's the triumph of love, yes. But it's also evidence of the not love. there's love and there's not love. And the tension between them is the explanation for all this that we constantly experience and see. So the cross is, or what looks like, the triumph of not love. Everything that opposes love was all thrown at him in its fullest degree, as much not love as can be dumped on a person was dumped on Jesus on the cross, and he died. That's because God loved the world so much that he gave his only begotten Son. That's because the Son loved the world so much and was so in love with the will of the Father that he gave everything he had. He was willing to take on the whole not love burden. And then on the third day, rose again to show that love is more powerful than not love. Ultimately, much more powerful. The resurrection leaves that terrible power of not love in the background. We don't forget it because we still experience it, but now we live in hope of the ultimate triumph of love. Now, in our journey through life, this battle between love and not love is evident every single day in the world and in our own hearts. Because wherever there is a decision to prefer darkness to light, we will experience that. I'm calling it not love. I just don't know how else to summarize everything that opposes God. I'm just calling it not love. Okay, let's take a look at how this plays itself out in the first reading. In the Acts of the Apostles, remember, we are reading about life in the Spirit. We're reading about the early church, the community that received the gift, the power of the resurrection, knew the risen Lord, and was sent forth to proclaim that good news to the whole world. And the early Christians experienced this conflict between love and not love. They proclaim Jesus Christ and they get thrown in jail. Well, why? Because some people do not want to accept the gospel. Now, what we know from the earlier chapters of Acts, Peter and John, after they performed a miracle healing that crippled man, they were at least called before the court. And then they were released, and they were told that don't talk about that guy anymore, don't talk about that. And part of the reason for that is the Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection. So for Peter and John to say, well, we're proclaiming someone who rose from the dead, that was automatically a no-no to the Sadducees. That they automatically opposed that on principle. There is no resurrection, therefore you must be wrong, no matter how many miracles you do. So you see, already there's this conflict between love and not love, between light and darkness. Well, now we skipped over a pretty big chunk of the Acts of the Apostles here. It's kind of surprising because in the Easter season, we read almost this whole book. But between yesterday's first reading and today's first reading, we skip over the disturbing passage about that married couple that sold their property and gave some of the money to the church and kept some of it for themselves. And we can read it yourself if you want to know more about it. But when Peter exposes their deception, they die. The passage right before that, we heard yesterday, the whole church lived in perfect harmony and they were all one mind and one heart and everybody lived with common, everyone was held everything in common and nobody was in need. Remember that passage yesterday? And all of a sudden we realized, well, I guess not. I guess they weren't all one mind and one heart because there were some, including this married couple, who were not all in the light. They had darkness, and so they experienced the consequences. Well, then after that, the passage from the Acts of the Apostles, the part we didn't read, is all about how the apostles are gaining more and more influence in Jerusalem, and people are flocking to them. And even the shadow of Peter as he passes by has healing power. So it's creating a huge disturbance. And that's the background to what we read about in today's first reading. The high priest rose up and all his companions, that is the party of the Sadducees, remember Sadducees, anti-resurrection, and filled with jealousy, laid hands on the apostles and put them in the public jail. Jealousy. Now, it's not only a theological dispute. You say resurrection, I say not resurrection. Now it's jealousy. You have something, or you're taking something that belongs to me. You're acting in the place that belongs to me. And that is an even more, that provokes an even more fiercer reaction. Before, they just called them before the tribunal of some sort. But in this case, now they throw them in jail. Like, you have to die for provoking this reaction. What happens? A little resurrection experience from, not from the tomb of death into new life, but from the prison into freedom. It happens miraculously. The angel comes, opens the door, tells them, go back to the temple, tell everybody about this life. And they say, well, okay, that's what we're supposed to do. That's what we'll do. It's a little recap of the resurrection. That freedom from darkness, freedom from death, freedom from not love, into the fullness of light, out into the temple area, proclaiming the gospel. Very puzzling to the guards and to the officials, who say, we got to the jail. The door was securely locked. The guards were stationed outside the doors. But when we opened them, we found no one inside. That is a reminder to us of what they found on Easter morning when they ran to the tomb. There was no one inside. Victory of God over sin and death. Victory of God over the powers of not love. Now, nobody knows what happens. They get arrested again. So this constant tension between love and not love, between the gospel and the anti-gospel, is part of the experience of the church from the very beginning until the very end. And it's part of our experience as well. It can be very discouraging to do good and experience rejection for it. Or to love and be hated for it. How can we overcome that discouragement? By keeping in mind the whole picture. Yes, in the moment, not love looks more powerful. And that's certainly the case much of the time. Wars, diseases, divisions, injustices, they just pile on. And it looks like a hopeless case. It seems to be getting worse all the time. Well, maybe. Certainly looked that way for Jesus too. Certainly looked that way for the apostles. They're proclaiming the gospel, they get thrown in jail. But in the big picture, no. Love is more powerful. Love is more powerful. Light is more powerful. That's why in this famous passage that, where Jesus proclaims God so loved the world, he wants to make it clear, and he does make it very clear, that God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world. So in all the punishments and all the problems are not God's condemnation of the world. That's the consequence of the decision of not love. If we choose not to be saved, we won't be saved. But if we choose to be saved, if we choose to believe, then we're already saved. And it's only a matter of time before we are set free from prison to proclaim the gospel. From the prison of whatever our suffering is now, and ultimately to be set free from this world, this valley of tears, to rejoice forever in glory. The Easter message is transcendent. It goes beyond historical experience and realities. It's heavenly. And that we can't forget that when we're passing through the trials of our day. So we keep our eyes fixed on the higher life, which is revealed by Jesus' resurrection.